So I don't think that politicians don't understand it. I think they understand it very well, and they just misuse this worry about money laundering and terrorism financing for a huge data phishing expedition.
I think to bring up the point as well, as you talked about your culture of privacy in Switzerland, it's also in the Constitution, you know, the right to privacy, which is something that's very interesting that Americans, we don't have that in our Constitution.
Welcome to the Swiss Money Secrets podcast, a podcast designed to cover all things offshore investing and banking from the Swiss perspective.
Let's get into it. So welcome back. We're excited to be doing our February edition of the Swiss Money Secrets podcast. Today we'll be discussing the Corporate Transparency Act that has been circulating around the globe. Specifically, today we'll be talking about its implementation in the EU, the US, and in Switzerland, and what that's going to look like. Before we get into that, we wanted to talk about some interesting news that came out of, I guess, Swiss quality products being desired around the world. Or maybe you could give the listeners some background of what exactly we're talking about there.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Switzerland has a great public transport system. It's very famous for punctuality. And so the quality of the train material coming out of Switzerland is highly appreciated around the world, around the globe, I would say. So far, there is a company in Switzerland that builds these trains. It's called Stadlerail, and they sold their trains to various jurisdictions and companies within Europe and also like other parts. But just recently, last week, they announced that they can sell trains to Chicago. So that they are going to upgrade their transport or their public transport, and that Stadlerail was chosen to deliver these trains.
Well, we read that news and thought it was very interesting to see, as well as with the Swiss franc being so strong, we still see a real focus from around the world on the desire for Swiss quality products in terms of technology, as well as the train itself, the quality of the build. And so that's really interesting to see that the city of Chicago decided with Stadlerail.
Yeah, and I think like infrastructure wise, it's oftentimes a very patriotic topic. And so to choose and provide a provider from another jurisdiction like Switzerland is kind of a big deal. And so we are very happy that this choice has been made and that we can contribute in like renewing the public transport system, starting with Chicago. Maybe there will be other states or other cities following.
Yeah, I'm sure there. Jamie, do you have anything you wanted to say?
No, I was just wondering when they start implementing that, because I'll be in Chicago in May, but I guess the trains won't be there yet.
I don't think so.
That'd be a fast order.
We are fast, but not that fast.
Yeah, cool. I mean, it's super interesting to see. Obviously, we're talking about this as a news topic. We're not making any explicit investment advice. It's just something that's quite interesting to see, the desire for Swiss products around the world. So with that, let's jump into today's topic, which is the Corporate Transparency Act. Just to give a background on what it is, the Corporate Transparency Act was pushed by the Financial Task Force.
Action Task Force.
Strongly backed by the OECD, which really the act in general is to push more transparency in companies and reporting. Essentially what it looks like is a beneficial owner registry list coming out or being produced, where companies have to then report their owners or the controlling people in their company to the various financial authorities or government authorities in their jurisdiction. From my side, on the US side, it's quite interesting to see how it's being rolled out. That's why we're even talking about it today. It was back in 2020. It was signed into law in the Anti-Money Laundering Act, and took its implementation, started on January 1st of 2024. So now there's timelines that have to be fulfilled by companies who are already formed in the US. The companies that have to report in the US are LLCs or similar to LLC structures. They have to report if you were formed before January 1st, 2024, you have a year to file the report. If you are a company that has filed since January 1st, 2024. You have 90 days. And if you're a company that will open up, let's say in 2025, January 1st, 2025, then you have 30 days to make that report. So what are you guys seeing, I guess, in the European, theater, EU and Switzerland, as far as this implementation?
Yes, I mean, in Europe it started much earlier, but it's also based on the anti-money laundering and terrorist financing topic. So they want to know who is behind the company, and every company or trust or LLC that is doing business in Europe has to file with this register. In Europe it's called the Beneficial Owner Register, but it's basically the same. And it is interesting that when they pushed it initially, it was like 2008 when they started or so, and then it was implemented first in 2016, and it was meant as being a public register. And that means that every person, or almost every person who shows some kind of interest, could access this data, which is highly problematic when it comes to data protection and to the protection of privacy, which is also a base law in Europe. And so in 2020 there was one party that was affected by this in Luxembourg. They filed a complaint and said, no, that's not right, I don't want it to be public because it could lead to fraud or to like trying to rob me or to
frivolous lawsuit.
Yeah, kind of like this, so that people see what wealth someone has, who is behind it. And so in the first instance, Luxembourg said, denied it and said, no, you cannot do that. It will still be public. And then it was handed over to the European Court of Justice. And they then decided in November 2022, that it in fact does contradict with the privacy laws, and so they had to shut it down in a way that it's not public anymore, but it's still in discussion. And it shows once again how overmotivated some politicians are, who have not really an idea what it means to have such a structure, because it incriminates these people who work with structures. Even so, it's perfectly fine, legal, there is enough things to justify having this kind of structure to protect your generational wealth, to protect what you have built, and to also eventually hand it over in a good manner to the next generation. And so oftentimes it is like the regulators just come from one perspective, where they say, oh, that's a bad thing. We have seen, for example, in 2016, the Panama Papers, which like hugely pushed this this topic and the willingness to go into this direction. But it's just like a very, very small part of people who might not behave in the right way or like misuse it for their like anti-money laundering stuff or so. And there is a huge amount of people who rightfully use these structures to plan and structure the wealth.
Yeah, I have a little bit of a different viewpoint, because I don't think that politicians don't understand it. I think they understand it very well, and they just misuse this worry about money laundering and terrorism financing for a huge data phishing expedition. I don't think that the problem is that they don't understand the value of privacy or whatever. I think the problem really is that they found a loophole, that they can gather more information, that they can gather more data. I mean, I've been at the Heckerling conference in Orlando, which is one of the largest estate planning conferences in the US, and I spoke to a lot of attorneys, because obviously we are not attorneys, we're also not Americans. And many of them were extremely worried about this just being the tip of the iceberg, and this being like sort of pushing a door open to just ask for more and more and more information. Because the governments, if there's illegal activities, or if there's any like reasonable suspicion for illegal activities, the governments already have the information or can obtain the information. So it seems extremely shady to me to say well, we now need a almost public register where everything, all the information is being gathered, because it just lumps everyone, as you said, it just lumps everyone into this suspicion category. It's almost like you are, like, we are suspecting that you do something wrong unless you, like, prove that you don't, except of, instead of the other way around. And the other thing that I think is very important is also what you mentioned, that a legitimate public interest could be anything. It could also be journalists who are just looking and fishing for information. We're here in Switzerland, we have a very notorious like list of the richest 300 people that comes out every year, and it's sometimes a bit questionable how the information is gathered and how they come up with the numbers. So I think from our side, and we probably speak for the majority of our industry, we have very probably like strong feelings that this is not a great direction. But the problem is with the FATF and the OECD being so well, having so much influence, if you refuse to implement it, like that's something that was discussed in Switzerland, if you're being blacklisted or even just graylisted, your financial industry is destroyed. Like you can't really do a lot of international business anymore, and you're most likely not going to recover from such a listing. So you don't really have much choice of implementing it. The only choice you have is how you're going to implement it and how much you involve the actually affected people, or like the professionals who work with the affected clients or not.
Yeah, and I mean, in all of this discussion, it's also the question, I mean, where is the protection against the government? You never know how the government develops, and if they have all the information, I mean, you mentioned it, they already have a lot of information, but if they have more and more information, I mean, where does it stop, and who guarantees you that they're not going to misuse it for their own interest if they need money? I mean, we have the highest debt to GDP ratios around the world in like Western economies, which is like ridiculous, and in some way or the other at some point they have to cut their costs, so they have to cut their debt, and who knows what is going to happen.
Yeah, I think that's one thing that I find interesting, especially the exchange of information. When you look at it from the US perspective, there's a few people who can actually access the register list, to the beneficial owner list. It's not open to the public, but it's to all governmental, almost all governmental agencies, as long as they go through the proper lines to obtain information. Foreign governments as well as foreign tax authorities, U.S. tax authorities, state, local, and tribal authorities in the U.S. And so it is in terms of who's going to be looking at this, well, essentially all the government agencies in the US, for example, will be able to get the data. And so it's, you know, it's even something you live your whole life, as an example, in Colorado, but, you know, states from like Alabama can go in and get information on you. And that is concerning. And I do agree, who does protect you as an owner and your privacy and your information when the government has it and you don't have any control of what the government gets to do? I think another point on this is, who is excluded in the US, for example, from reporting to this list?
Yeah.
And there's like 23 categories that are excluded, and one that kind of I think is shocking to see in quotation marks is large companies that operate within the US. That's where all the money is. So that means all these small LLCs, these medium LLCs, these small businesses, they have to do the reporting. So as Jamie, you said, you know, it's this data phishing ability on not just big companies, but small companies. Now, some of the reason that they're exempt from reporting is because they're already on some, so they're registered with the SEC, or they already have this data given to the government, but now they're going after everyone else. And that, for me, is the most concerning.
And it also just creates more administrative work and then essentially also more cost. And they will have to be passed on to the consumers, to the clients, and
to the people also.
Yeah, also to the people. I mean, it's also going to cost more on the government side, right? Because someone has to maintain the register, someone has to look up the information. But to maybe move a bit away from the negative, I think what is very interesting is we have now this Corporate Transparency Act or Beneficial Owner Register, however it's called in different countries, and we have this very nice like comparison of how the US implements laws, how the European Union implements laws, and how Switzerland implements laws. And I think this is once again like a sort of case study of showing how the Swiss direct democracy is different, right? On paper, all three, like the European Union, the US, Switzerland, they're all democracies, but they work very differently. So we already heard the European Union, they were like the first, they just ran with it. They completely like overshot the target. They made, like they constructed something that didn't make sense, that was going against the human right to privacy. And they have also been, I believe, I'm not sure if they have been fined, but they were definitely told off by the European Court of Justice that said, well, you can't do this. So they had to like move back a little, like downsize their whole operation. And then second in line was the US. That was a little bit less extreme than the European Union. I think they never had like a publicly available register, but they still just had register and did what they wanted to do. And then last in line would be Switzerland. And as of today, we don't have the Corporate Transparency Act or like a register here yet. We're working on it. So we're not going to say it's never happening here. It will come as well because Switzerland does not want to be black or gray listed. But we take our time more. And what I find extremely interesting, something that our American listeners might not be really be aware of, is if Switzerland starts the process of writing a new law, they have a phase where they invite the whole public to respond to it. I don't know what the English word for it is, but it's essentially a couple of months. It's typically around half a year or so, where every company, association, and even private citizens, anyone, everyone who wants to say something can say something and write to our executive body, which would be like we have seven presidents, so like you can write to their offices, and they will gather everything in like one folder. And then they will look through it and work through it. And obviously not every single point of information is going to be taken into consideration. But one example is we are wealth managers here in Switzerland. So we are part of the Swiss Association of Wealth Managers, where I'm also on the board and where I'm also a part of like the committee for like political, lobbying, essentially, where we talk to politicians about the interests of the financial industry, where we try to advocate for our clients and we try to influence the lawmaking process in a way that also makes practical sense. And I think lobbying oftentimes gets a very bad rep, especially in the US, because it's very tied to money. But here in Switzerland, it's a little bit different. While it's still a little bit controversial and people have different opinions on it, my personal opinion is that it makes sense in a parliament where people are not full-time politicians, right? Only the seven-person executive committee, they're the only ones who work full-time in politics. Everyone else has essentially a full-time job and then is in the parliament on like a part-time basis. So if you're a part-time politician, you cannot possibly know about everything and everyone's interests and how things work. So they often invite people who are from the industries that they are going to govern and invite them to share their perspective. So us as an association representing about 800 different wealth managers here in Switzerland, we had the chance to write a very extensive letter just explaining our thought process and criticism on the implementation of the law. And this is also why it takes a bit longer. And that doesn't only give us the opportunity to include the thoughts of the end clients and the professionals involved, but it also gives us the opportunity to look at what other people do or other countries and governments do, and then maybe do it better, right? So for us, from our side, from Switzerland, it was always very clear it would not be a public register, first of all, because it very much goes against our culture of privacy, but then also because it clearly didn't work with the European Union. So I think that's a very just important and insightful view into like how Swiss politics works. And that's not just for this law. It's for every single law that's being implemented. People can share their thoughts on it, and they are being considered in fairly reasonable amounts.
Yes.
But I think to bring up the point as well, as you talked about your culture of privacy in Switzerland, it's also in the Constitution, you know, the right to privacy, which is something that's very interesting that Americans, we don't have that in our Constitution. And so that's an interesting point of how will this look for Switzerland in dealing with a law that could be controversial to the Constitution, and how it's going to be written will be very interesting. I mean, you talked about the process of how, you know, laws are made and discussed, and we have similar, I mean, we have committees that discuss laws and get the lobbying in front of them, but at the end of the day, we as Americans don't have any say if we like that law or not. We can write our senators, we can write our representatives, but once it goes through, we have no say. And in Switzerland, you always have the backdrop of if we create a law and the people don't like it, we might have to take a step back and take it away because there'll be a vote against it. And I think that that backdrop allows for Switzerland to move, it makes them move at a slower pace, but it also makes them move at an efficient pace to ensure that the law that does get passed is going to not be then immediately, or not immediately revoked, but quickly revoked by the public because they disagree with it.
Yeah. I think that's such an important point, because now I just spoke about the very beginning, right, where you can give feedback on the law. Then the feedback will be implemented, and then the law will be presented to the public, and the public has to say yes to it. So that makes politicians a lot more reasonable by nature, because they know they need to get more than 50% of the voting population system to say yes to it. And then even if like the majority says yes to it, you can still like gather enough signatures at a later point in time if things change, and then you can have the law changed again. And I think that really makes politicians take into consideration the like popular opinion of the general public, as well as the industries that they're representing, because they know that they get to have the final say also on like minor issues. Like one example is now this Sunday we're gonna vote on like whether or not the lanes at the airport are gonna be extended. That's something that like the general public says yes or no to, like, do we want to have like the landing strips, whatever, do we want to have them extended or not? And I think that's something that's quite remarkable for a lot of countries that are not used to that kind of specific say by the general population.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's something that's certainly fascinating. I think one other point that maybe we didn't talk about exactly was what exactly has to be reported on the beneficial owner registry. So for instance, in the States, the company has to report their name, their business address, and their controlling parties. And those controlling parties has to be their full legal name, their date of birth, their passport number, and then a copy of their passport. Passport is the generally accepted one, but it could be a driver's license as well. And the company actually has to also report their tax number. Is that pretty similar to what we see in Europe and Switzerland?
I would say so. I mean, one difference, one thing you probably did, or I don't think you mentioned it, is like the living address of the beneficial owners
yeah.
that has to be reported as well
yeah.
so far. And then it is also the discussion or the question, how much of the information is accessible to what people or what authorities. So there are some data, as for example, the living address is much more sensitive as your name is, for example. And so there will be some differences in this regard.
I think for Switzerland it's too early to say. Yeah. So we do have a first draft, and for those people who are interested, I mean, we wrote a piece on it on our website under the Insights tab, where we also publish like the opinion of the association of what they want to have changed. It's on German, it's only in German, but I guess you could have translated it online if you're really interested. But we only have the draft of the law, and the government now has to take into consideration all the feedback, so it's really just too soon to say what exactly they will want to know. Probably it will be similar to what you just listed. I'd assume maybe it's a little less extensive, but we just don't know yet.
Yeah. Do we have any final thoughts or things that we want to share to the audience before we close out this episode?
I would say, I mean, it's very encouraging how Switzerland moves on topics like this. There will always be some changes on the regulatory side coming in. I mean, there is a lot of interest to make things more like, to adjust things to each other so that every country, every jurisdiction has the same rules. But at the end of the day, I mean, it's good to know that we have a say, that we can interfere with things that are probably going to change in Switzerland, and we will take it seriously. We will do whatever is in our power to protect our clients' interests.
Yeah, I fully agree. I think that's a very nice like final word. I don't really have anything to say other than it's just important that people stay up to date on what rules and regulations are being put in place, and that they stay critical. And that also, I'm a firm believer of voicing your opinion. And even in the US, if you cannot directly get involved in the lawmaking process, like write your local politicians and tell them how you feel. I do believe that is something that makes a change. And the more people voice their opinion, the fairer and the better typically the system is going to be.
Perfect. And my final thought is that if you're in the US and you have one of these companies, make sure to see if you comply with it, because there are some fines and punishments if you don't. So it's good to go read up on it. Seek legal counsel if you're in that situation.
Thanks again for joining us on this episode of the Swiss Money Secrets podcast. If you would like to learn more about WHVP and what we do, check us out on our website at whvp.ch. Or you can check us out on any of our social media handles on LinkedIn, Facebook, YouTube, or Instagram by simply searching WHVP. Have a great rest of your day.